We were speaking of dogs with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, and an awful lot of people got acquainted with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas and dogs through The Hidden Life of Dogs, and The Social Life of Dogs, or The Tribe of Tiger, or The Herd. There's just so many wonderful books, or The Old Way, or... Let's go back to that nanny dog. So you lock the nanny in the...
She was rescued, but she quit. And I think my parents gave up trying to have it. But we had a real nanny who was a very large Newfoundland dog named Mishka. And we were devoted to her, and she felt like a mother. And she liked us, as opposed to the other nanny, who obviously didn't.
Not after that.
For some reason.
Well, counting for judgment.
Well, it's good to have a nanny who loves you.
It is.
And Mishka did.
And she did. She wouldn't let us cross the street, even if no car was coming. And we went, one summer my parents rented a house on Cape Cod near the ocean, and she wouldn't let us anywhere near the ocean or any body of water. She would grab our clothes and pull us back if we did. And we were very frustrated, but she was unmoved.
And you did not drown.
We didn't drown. And, we couldn't disobey her. I was eye level with her. When I stood up, I looked straight into her eyes, and you could see that she meant business. She was a very powerful, and from that, then we had another dog who was more like one of the children. He would play with us,
But you also had cats.
And we had cats. From the dogs, I learned how similar people are to people, and dogs are the same thing, as far as I'm concerned. From the cats, we had cats who lived in the basement, mostly in the basement. Other cats would come in from the street. There was a cat door on the cellar door. And other cats would come, male cats. We had two unspayed females, and the males would come in from the streets. And they would interact in these homes.
Do we call it copulatory behavior?
Well, we didn't see them copulate. We saw them. It was just me. It was their rivalry with each other and their efforts to impress the females as to their status, their power. This is why cats are the way they are. Cats are healthier than dogs. They don't get hip dysplasia. They don't get all these things that dogs get. Because they choose their own mates. The females choose their own mates. And they choose for power, status, things like that. So we choose for long, fuzzy fur or, something like that.
So you learned from dogs about people. What did you learn from cats?
How the animals have fascinating lives of their own. I had no understanding of why the males were down there. I had no knowledge of... I didn't know about human reproduction, let alone cat reproduction. But, that's what they were for. But I didn't know that till later. I didn't even wonder, because the idea to wonder why things were didn't hit me at that age. I was like five.
Yeah.
It was just to know what was going on was all I wanted to know. And I was enthralled by the cats. I wanted to be a cat and shape change into a cat. And that didn't work. But
but the longing has not gone away.
The longing didn't go away. And it's that... They have fascinating, meaningful lives, all of their own, which have nothing to do with people. And one of the big insights that has lasted me the rest of my life. And it's the basis of my work, really.
Yes.
I got it young, yeah.
Say that again. The basis of your life is your relationship with a cat or cats and dogs.
Well, it was the understanding that animals have meaningful lives that are not involved with people, that people have nothing to do with, which was, it's true.
But it's not cats and dogs alone.
No, all animals. All animals have, we're so human-centered. We think of it in relationship, we think of other creatures in relationship to us, in one way or another. But what I'm trying to say is there's no relationship to us, and it's...
You mean we don't matter to life in the universe?
Well, there's the possibility.
Was it clear to you at that time that not only were they different from us and would do many of them fine without us, but we tend to think, dogs behave this way, cats behave this way. Was it clear to you that these were individuals?
Oh, sure. Oh, always individuals. I never saw animals.
It was not a generic cat, generic dog.
No, I never saw
this individual. And
I don't think I ever saw any animal as anything but an individual, even everything.
You told me a wonderful story about way later as an adult when you were out in the research part of your life that comes way after other things that you have written and done, that you were with people who were observing mountain lions, and you were probably doing research for the Tribe of Tiger. I'm making that up, but it's a good guess.
I was.
Tell me that experience again, as you told me last night. I found it a really deep insight about how one might approach the rest of the natural world, of which we are, whether we remember it or not, a part.
Well, I was thinking of, I joined a person who was doing mountain lion biology and some people who were doing it with him. And we went out looking for a mountain lion. In fact, there was one lying on a big branch of a tree. And he was a little nervous to see all the people. His tail was twitching, but he was up high and they were down low, and the people stayed, and he watched the people. And it was almost lunchtime, and I was afraid they would what I did was to lie down on the ground and bury myself with leaves. He didn't see me.
You're out in the wild somewhere.
We're out in the woods. Yeah. He didn't see me doing it. They were wondering what kind of a mountain lion he was, puma, konkal, or whatever. Felis konkal, or whatever. And talking about him, and then they went back toward their truck, and I didn't go. I waited because I thought he'd come down if he didn't see me. And
so you wanted him to come
down? Oh yes.
So that.
It didn't occur to me that anything bad could happen.
Good.
You were still young.
No, I was very much a grown up by that time. I forget how old, but I mean, I wasn't. An innocent.
This was
an adult decision that you wanted the mountain lion to come down.
Well, I just thought they're really so shy of people that I didn't think he'd attack me. I mean, I thought he'd run if he saw me, but he would have, I'm sure. Anyway, but I just wanted to see what he'd do. And so, but the people were really going to leave, and I thought they'd go without me. So I got up, and the mountain lion had no idea I was there, and you should have seen his face, most astonished face I have ever seen. So that was who he was, which I thought was much more interesting than what he was. That too has been carried me along for years and years.
Were we, as we look around, I'm going to go back to saying part and a part of, if we were to think of other creatures as who they are rather than what they are, would we not have quite a different world?
Oh, I think so. Yes and no.
Whether it is a bird or a blue-green algae, or you could really kind of carry this across the spectrum of life as we know it, without being anthropocentric or all those other things one gets accused of, couldn't one respectfully have explored who a creature is rather than what, and begin to rejoin the fabric of life rather than being, as the reductionists have forced us into little places where you cut off the frog and then wonder why the frog doesn't jump anymore? Mm-hmm. Isn't that part of how one begins to restitch oneself into the natural order?
I think that's very interesting thing to talk about. I mean, I think if we gave any other species, whether it's a tree or a mountain lion or a person or whatever, the same respect that we would give to a person, or the same, think of them in the same terms that we think of a person, because everything has the same problems. They need to get food, and they need to pass their genes to the next generation and to live and to stay alive.
There would be a very deep respect in that, wouldn't there?
There would be a deep respect in that.
Haven't we some distance to go before?
An extremely long distance to go, yeah. Well, we don't all, not all of us do, but I mean, now and then one meets people who would agree. I mean, there are quite a few people who would agree.
want to go back.
And I respect them. Excuse me. Not the others.
Well,
this experience of being sort of raised by and learning from, and perhaps more importantly, animals closely over an extended period of time, and then taking that into the Kalahari.
Mm.
I mean, as a young person, you clearly had experience around the various parts of the world, but that must have been, even given that, that must have been a fairly shocking thing at the age of 18 to be planted in this, you know, where the dragons live. How was that?
Well, I wasn't afraid of it at all. There was nothing to fear. I mean, I longed to see lions. If we saw lions, I was thrilled and too happy. But and I didn't think. I mean, it was really a wonderful place. It was an ecosystem, millions of years, developed to be a dry, yet abundant ecosystem, and it was quite an interesting place to be, with wildlife of all kinds. I mean, just fabulous. And
not quite the same as getting in a truck, calling it a safari, going out and shooting pictures with 77 other tourists.
No.
Your mother is credited as being the anthropologist who went out and got the first pictures, who took the first stories down, who became intimate with the people in ways that had not happened across the ethnic divide, or if you must say racial, the color line, if you will. It was her being an adept, if you will, at being involved with these people, the Bushmen, who prefer, as I understand it, to be called Bushmen. I'm not being disrespectful.
No, it is my understanding that at least until very recent, things may have changed by now, but no, I don't think so. Everybody in Namibia, according to an anthropologist who comes from Namibia, everybody calls them Bushmen. They call themselves Bushmen. San was coined for them by other people, by the word San.
So
actually, there's more to it than that, but anyway.
That's enough. Huh?
That's enough.
That's another book. The experience itself has to have informed some of the things moving forward. And again, you've written an autobiography so that you give us a peek at least into all of these other things. Let's come back in just a moment and talk about how that experience may have or have not informed other experiences that come thereafter. If you are willing, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas?
The Kalahari experience just changed my life. I mean, it used to seem to me that people, there were two worlds. The world of this I learned from the cats in the basement. There were two worlds. One is the world of people, where people manage everything and they have the control of everything. And the other is the world of everything else. And you get little glimpses of the world of everything else if you take a walk in the woods or something like that. But the Kalahari, it is quote unquote unexplored by anybody except the Bushmen. Mm-hmm. Area was everything else. That was the world of everything else. So you could go there and see how it worked, and it was a mind-bending experience and a life-changing experience, needless to say.
We're going to come back in just a moment with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, and I trust you'll be here because she's irresistible. Be with us when we return.